Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Guest speakers are not affiliated with or endorsed by LPL Financial or Gateway Financial Partners. Content provided is for general information only and not specific advice. No strategy assures success.
Delivering financial professionals' insights, thoughts, and cutting-edge strategies from industry leaders on how to build your most successful practice with the freedom of independence. Live from Gateway Financial Partners Studio at our Connecticut headquarters, we bring you Insights for Independence with your hosts, David Wood and S.J. Whittemore.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us on today's Insights for Independence podcast. We're in the midst of the corona pandemic epidemic, so SJ and I are safely 6 feet away in the Gateway Financial Partners studio.
Absolutely. Happy Thursday. How are we?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to have a special guest with me today, a dear friend of mine for probably the last 10 years and someone who has built an absolutely incredible financial services practice headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas, someone who's been in the financial services business for the last 30 years. Appeared on CNBC, ABC, CBS, frequent retirement plan expert and contributor to local TXA21 News, which is a CBS affiliate in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'd like to welcome to the show Burke Rosenthal. Burke, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure. It's always great to catch up and connect with you. And Burke is one of the few people that attended my wedding and also someone who popped in last 4th of July, unexpected, to my 4th of July party. Just a knock on the door at 3 o'clock, and it's Burke and his wife, Alicia, who run the practice down there, and it was great to have them. So, Burke, I wanted
to... Now, just to be clear, this is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, not 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right, but it could have been 3 o'clock in the morning, too. So Burke, I want to jump right into it. You've built an absolutely phenomenal practice and business down serving clients in the Texas area, but also have built a client base nationwide. You're incredibly successful in the industry. I've got so much respect for you and for what you've done. And I want to just kind of start with this question. Burke, as I've been to his house, he's just an incredibly organized person. And I want to understand, when you approach the financial services business, how much of your success is attributed to your organization, and how much do you think is attributed to your stunning good looks?
Oh, I think it's about 50-50.
Okay.
Now, I think a lot of it has to do with organization. It's interesting that you said that, because from the very beginning, my staff used to kind of give me a little jab, because I would always say, we need a system. We need a system where we repeat the same marketing methods over and over and over again. And that's basically what we did, is create a system from getting in front of people as potential clients, then getting them in the office and getting in front of them, at a more personal level. I mean, like in a group setting, seminars, workshops, that kind of thing. And then getting them in the office in an individual setting, and then showing them what we could do in working with them as their, advisory firm. And then repeating the process just over and over and over again. And so I've just kind of continued to repeat that in every facet of the business, not just in marketing. I think organization has a whole lot to do with anybody's success.
Yeah, and
just fly by the seat of your pants. That's not really a great way to do business.
No, and especially when you look to scale up a practice. So I think that's part of it, right? It comes down to getting those clients in, and then it comes down to a repeatable client service model that keeps them happy. And I think being very focused on the organization and the service of your clients, which I know you are from conversations we've had, is incredibly important. So share a little bit about what your client service model looks like, and some of the ways that you're keeping track and staying in front of clients and kind of organizing the back end of what you do.
Well, one of the best ways we keep track is our CRM system, our database. We have consistently improved and added things to that over the years. And I think regardless of what CRM system you use, you've got to have one. It's interesting, because when I first started with Prudential 30 years ago, we used what was called at that time the one card system. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was basically
the old 3x5 index cards in the box.
Yeah. It was basically a database on paper, right? But it didn't quite have the same organizational advantages that modern technology does. But in a sense, it was the same thing. It was a way for you to stay on track of when you needed to do what, right? You know, you had it in there on a certain month, a certain day, et cetera. And so it told you what to do and when to do it. And our database essentially does, you know, the same thing. And so when we have a client meeting with an existing client, as soon as that meeting's over, then we use CopyTalk. So we call CopyTalk, call an 800 number. We dictate everything. We do it by a client household number. So there's no, you know, public information going through email. And then we receive all those notes back via email with first names only and then that household number. And then that goes to our client service department. They add all the notes, then they enter the activities, which are any of the follow-up items that we have as a result of the meeting. And then one of our, basically our first activity is always schedule standard client follow-up. Well, what that means is they look at the client tier. And the client tier is based on not only the assets that they have invested with us, it's any outside assets we might be aware of. They get a score for that. Their primary score is their assets. Right. But then they get additional scoring for tenure with our firm, the number of referrals they've sent to our firm, and basically who they're associated with, whether it's family members that are also clients, friends or former coworkers or current coworkers that are also clients, people they know that are clients that may or may not have been referrers or referees. They get a score for distribution rate. So we work with a lot of retirees, and the lower their distribution rate, you know, the better their long-term likely success, the higher their score. There's even a likability score in there, which it typically defaults to a certain number, and we really only change it if they're really difficult clients, then they get some points deducted. And if they're really, really, really above and beyond, they might get some points added. But most of our clients get the standard score on that one. And then there's a few other variables. And so our system automatically calculates a total score, puts them in a tier, which we, you know, renamed from, I think we used to have A, B, C, D, and now we have double diamond, diamond, platinum, and so on, you know, gold, silver, copper is our lowest end. And so after the meeting, that schedule standard client follow-up is based upon the client service schedule that we've set in place based on their tier. And we used to treat everybody the same, and then we came to determine that you can't treat everybody the same. You know, you have to give your best treatment to your best clients. We provide a certain level of service, obviously, to everybody, you know, a good minimum level of service, but we go above and beyond for double diamond and then, you know, so on.
I think that's really important. I think you touched on a point that's been a really large area of conversation, especially during this COVID pandemic, is that, you know, you want to make sure that you're offering the same level of service, you know, across the board. But then, of course, you do have those elevated levels. And especially you said that you kind of started this with a marketing idea, that marketing needed to go in a certain direction and being able to cater them by tiers. I think that's interesting. We're constantly trying to update our marketing systems and offer more, but still be able to, even at what you would consider the copper level, allow a certain level of service to be standard. So do you think that that is as involved on the operation side as marketing? Do you think that it takes a large effect across the board? Can you just get a little bit more into that? I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think so. But what I have found over the last probably 10 years is that the operation side, which I think of as like, you know, phone systems, you know, lease payments, you know, things like that, I'm very involved in. Those, some of which are not quite as, I would say, organized, like our lease. Our lease is up the end of July. That's something that, you know, I deal with it when it comes up. It's not something I have to deal with on a regular basis. But say our advisory firm issues, I have to stay on top of those. So I would categorize those as compliance. Well, obviously, that's every bit as important as marketing. Client service, same thing. But I will tell you, one huge advantage I've benefited from over the last 10 plus years is that in some areas of our business, I don't know much about them anymore. So client service is a perfect example. I couldn't open up an LPL account on my own. I was going to say if I had to, I'd call LPL and say, how do I do this? But I don't have a clue how to do it. But my staff does. So they've put their own processes in place, and they have steps that they follow to open an account. And they've developed procedures so that if, you know, both client service representatives we have in our office are out for some reason, somebody could technically step in, read those procedures. And my thing has always been, somebody should be able to come in who's never done this before, read your procedures, and be able to do it without messing anything up. That's a well-written procedure in my book. So I think, yeah, it's important across the board. I think marketing is kind of what drives everything, because if you don't have, you know, clients existing and potentially new clients, then you don't really have a business. So I would put it at the top, but then you've got to properly service those clients so they remain clients. And you've got to make sure your operational house is in order so that you maintain clients. And you got to make sure your compliance is in order so you, you know, remain in business, basically.
Right. So, Burke, I know most of your clients are assigned to another advisor within the firm. Tell us a little bit more about how that works and how often a typical client would be meeting with you or meeting with one of the advisors in your organization.
Good question. So we have, it depends on their tier. The upper level tiers, double diamond, some of our platinum, and then some of our even gold, for example, or silver that have been with us for many, many years, are serviced by two advisors. It would be myself and one of my associate advisors. But the bigger percentage of our households are serviced by one of those associate advisors. And they would, you know, the client would meet with them without my involvement. I oversee it, obviously, but I'm not in the meetings and don't take the inbound calls, you know, unless I need to or they're not available. And then with the joint ones, I'm in the meeting, the advisor's in the meeting. We both, you know, I wouldn't say either of us lead the meeting. We both jointly lead the meeting. But then after the meeting's over, I'm done. And so that allows me to hold more meetings and not do as much of the follow-up. You know, I was talking about copy talk earlier. They do that. They do the follow-up summary notes. They send the follow-up to the client service team for whatever issues need to be followed up on. They might circle back, you know, to me with a particular question or something like that. But it allows me to just reach out to top clients just kind of at random. One of your questions was, what's our schedule in meeting with clients and how often? Everybody has an annual review. Some of our clients are twice a year. A few of our clients are four times a year. Personally, I think four times a year, which I know a lot of advisors do that. I think it's overkill personally. I would rather have an annual review and then just have touches sporadically throughout the year where we're reaching out to the client. How are you doing? Hey, by the way, here's some changes I think we need to make. Or, by the way, I don't think we do need to make any changes. I just want to see how you're doing, see if you have any questions for us. We call that a desk review. And we'll typically schedule a desk review during the year for our upper clients. Or if we have clients, and I think all of us have this, we have some clients where we send out postcards. And then a few days later, if we don't get a phone call, we call them. And depending on their tier, we make one or two calls. Used to make three, but we figured, hey, if we send a postcard and make two calls, the next step is we do a desk review, which means we're going to do a review whether they come in or not. We pull everything as if they're coming in, and we basically review without the client being present. And then we follow up with a phone call and let them know what changes we recommend or that we don't recommend any changes and that we've gone over everything. I'll keep your file here for the next day or two. If you have any questions, call me. You know, otherwise, we'll talk next time.
Question on that, actually. Yeah. So we have moved, of course, as the entire nation or industry has moved a lot towards different technology to kind of make business work during this time. Do you think that you've been integrating, you know, technology differently based on the way that you've kind of operated your practice for as long as you've had it that way in that tiered structure? You know, how does technology play a part in that for you?
Well, it's played a big part in the last 6 or 8 weeks, obviously, with everything going on. Previous to that, I was the only one that ever worked remotely. And I would work from my home office sometimes, or I would work from a second home office on occasion. But the last 6+ weeks, our entire staff has, for the most part, worked remotely with, you know, receptionist coming to the office I think Tuesday and Thursday mornings, working half a day checking mail. But everybody's been using voice over internet phones from home, logging in remotely, and it has worked unbelievably smooth considering the fact that nobody else had ever worked remotely besides myself prior to this unique time.
Right.
So, you know, without this technology, we would have been lost.
Well, and it's a good example about scale, because I know there's been very little effect on our advisors, our organization, because we've really spent a lot of money and know-how and time to develop that ability, not necessarily prepared for COVID, but prepared for, I think, the way business is going to operate in the future. And I really see what's happening now as something that's going to change, you know, client behavior for years to come. And I know you did and have done for years a lot of you know, video conference calls remotely with clients. So your clients have gotten used to that. And for a lot of advisors, this has been, a new experience for them. And I think it's been difficult. So the technology we've seen for practices that have the scale and have understood this and understood how important this stuff is, I think there's been minimal impact for a lot of those folks.
I agree. And I think a lot of people that didn't have really the technology before have been quickly thrust into it because of everything going on. I think there's a lot of people that have learned a whole lot in a very short period of time, but it's definitely been an advantage already having, been there. I think I've told you before, we stopped doing seminars probably 6 years ago and started doing webinars. So we've been doing that already. So it was very easy to transition. And when, we did a couple of market updates, in the month of March and early April. And so we didn't have to figure anything out because we'd already been using that technology prior to that. But it's so easy to learn. I'd certainly encourage anybody that has not done that to pick up that extra piece of technology. It's not difficult. Well, but it's that much smoother, if you've already been doing it.
We moved to a Microsoft Teams environment last year, and we bought a whole slew of webcams and started to install them on everybody's computer. And some of the advisors said, well, what do I need this for? And literally 6 months later, they kind of figured it out the hard way. But it was a good learning experience and a good way to kind of understand the importance of that stuff. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing for marketing now. So I think part of that is most likely your existing client service model, which is really tight, and you've got happy clients. But tell us more about what you've done in the past from a marketing perspective and kind of what you're doing now to grow and maintain your practice.
Yeah, we really haven't done a lot of marketing this year, just, I guess, because of this unique situation we're in the last 6 to 8 weeks. But going backwards, we've done at least a webinar per quarter for either general public or for one of three local corporations. We've got a large clientele with AT&T, Verizon, and Lockheed Martin. Those three companies comprise probably 3/4 of our households, maybe a little more. And it's just kind of happened over time. One, because we knew a few people at those companies, started doing seminars in some cases at those companies when they allowed us to do that back in the day, not so much anymore. And we're doing webinars anyway, so it kind of doesn't matter as much as maybe it did a few years ago. And then just word of mouth, it grew and grew. So that was, to me, a big benefit to be in a niche of people that know each other and have a commonality, regardless of what it is, whether it's an employer or a hobby or what have you. I think that really propelled our business when we started working with people that had a really strong commonality, and that made our referral network much, much stronger than I think it would have been otherwise. Prior to that, I was working with pre-retirees, regardless of where they came from. And that worked pretty well because it's still somewhat of a niche. I wasn't working with anybody and everybody. I was working with people predominantly that were within about 5 years of retirement or already retired. But then when we dug a little deeper and started working, for the most part, not 100%, but predominantly with employees of those three corporations, that kind of took us to the next level. It's funny because we have had so many people that we're in a meeting and they work for one of those companies, or maybe they've retired for one of those companies, and they'll say something to the effect of, you know, my next door neighbor, I was talking to them and they need an advisor, but you only work with Lockheed Martin employees, right? And I have to chuckle and say, no, no, no. We work with a lot of Lockheed Martin employees, but we're not restricted to Lockheed Martin employees. But some of them actually think that because the way they were referred to us, they assumed that we were just an advisory firm for Lockheed Martin employees or AT&T or what have you.
Well, sometimes that's a good thing because what it does is it takes some of the pressure off that you're trying to sell them. So it can be a situation where because their guard is down, they're much more interested in what you do because they don't think that they're a prospect for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So how important do you think that that kind of niche marketing was? And I often hear advisors say, well, Burke's successful because he's got Verizon employees or Burke's successful because he's got Lockheed Martin employees. And I hear that with advisors when they look at other advisors that have that niche. That niche, I'm going to guess it didn't fall on your lap.
No, not at all.
Oh.
A lot of hard work over a number of years. But it's interesting you ask me that because I often think and wonder, okay, if I had just continued what I was doing, because I was doing public seminars, you know, talk about a system. I was doing public seminars, advertising the same way every 2 weeks, like clockwork, just every 2 weeks. I would bounce from one of about four hotels in the area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I got a little bit of geographical, you know, diversity. And I just did it over and over and over again until I kind of stumbled on General Dynamics, which has since become Lockheed Martin. They were, you know, Lockheed Martin bought them and then they were allowed to roll their 401ks out. So I started doing these little seminars in our building upstairs for General Dynamics employees. And then it just kind of grew from there. And they ended up getting a working relationship with the CWA union for AT&T, which was SBC at the time, and just kind of kept working that. So I have no way of knowing if I had not kind of sort of stumbled, but then kind of took that and worked with it in the case of two of the three companies that we've talked about. I have no way of knowing if I just kept doing, you know, general population, if my success would have been the same or less. I think it would have been less, but I have no way of knowing because that's not the direction that I took. I have to believe that having some type of niche, even if it's just, you know, people within 5 years of retirement or what have you, has to help to some degree.
But I also
think, as opposed to just being, you know, all things to all people.
Yeah, but I also think it goes back to what you said in the beginning about having a repeatable process and a system behind it, right? So you started out doing seminars every other week. And how many years do you think you did that for?
Oh, I started doing that in 93. Basically, when I left Prudential and transitioned into my own practice, I started doing immediately. And I did that through 99, actually late 98. That's when I started doing very consistent programs for SBC. And then along the way, I did some for GD and Lockheed between 93 and 99, but they were a little bit more sporadic. And then after AT&T seminars became so successful, then we went back and started doing the same thing at Lockheed Martin that we'd done in the past, but we kind of used some of the processes we'd used at AT&T that had worked so well at Lockheed Martin, and it worked even better than it did basically round one.
So, well, I would imagine you got some practice doing that then.
Right, right. Yeah, and we learned, you know, what to do and what not to do. And there's probably one of the biggest takeaways that I got from Strategic Coach back in the day when I went through Dan Sullivan's program is something he calls the Experience Transformer. I believe that's what it's called. We have a sheet saves. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I think it's the Experience Transformer where you take the experience from an event and we still do this like we did it after our last holiday event that we had for clients in our office. We do it at a restaurant 1 year and then we do it in our office the next and we alternate. But every time we have one, we put what worked and what didn't work, you know, and what would we do different next time? And so like we had a new client dinner in the fall and there were some things that worked out great, but it was a restaurant we'd never done one of these at before. And there were some things that we thought, you know, if we do it there again, we need to make this change or that change. And everybody in the office does that. And then we compile that all together on a spreadsheet. And so we're always trying to improve our processes so that next time we don't make the same mistake, you know, twice.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've got some way of documenting all that stuff internally.
Yeah. Yep.
So is that computerized in your CRM or is that paper files?
No, on our server we have, basically we've got a marketing folder and then there's a bunch of subfolders, whether it's a particular corporation or for the general public. And then there's events. And then there's, you know, all our slides are in a particular folder. All our events are in a particular folder. And then they're sorted in chronological order. And then you just go back to that last event, pull it up, look at the experience transformer. Go, okay, we're preparing this event. We want to see what's worked in the past, what hadn't worked. And, of course, it's built off the last one. So then we use that to make sure, you know, that we're doing what we know worked and we're avoiding what we know didn't work.
Right.
When we schedule that next event.
That's awesome. So I know you mentioned the strategic coach, Dan Sullivan. I've been through that program. It's phenomenal. And tell us a bit more about some of the professional development that you have done in the past and some of the stuff you continue to do. I know you're involved in some study groups. How important do you think that has been in kind of where you're positioned in the industry today?
I think they're all important. I've been in so many different study groups. And actually, the first study group that I was in began in 1998, and we still meet to this day. It used to be every other week, and then it became monthly, and then it became bi-monthly, and now it's quarterly. And we all originally worked with phone company employees, and now some of us still do, and some of us have gone in other directions, but we still stay in touch to keep up with, you know, what's working, what's not working, what's going on. And I think that along with the other study groups I've been in have all been really beneficial, and you get different ideas. You know, you're always learning and you're always sharing. Probably one of the first things that popped in my mind when you asked that question, though, beyond study groups, when I first, the first seminar I ever did, I was still with Prudential, and my buddy that I kind of partnered up with there, he and I decided, okay, we're going to start doing seminars. And he did half and I did half. And I stood up at that podium, which I don't use podiums anymore. I think it's much better to just kind of roam around at the front. But anyway, I hid behind the podium and I read my notes. I mean, I read my notes from start to finish and I was absolutely terrified. Mm-hmm. And then I went through a Dale Carnegie program and that completely changed my ability to speak in front of people. Not that that's the, you know, there's tons of speaking programs out there. But that completely changed my confidence level in being able to speak to a group of people. I know some people that comes naturally to me, it didn't. But I highly recommend if somebody's, you know, and even if somebody's not going to do seminars or webinars, it helps make you a better communicator. If you go through some type of speaking or communications program. That was probably my earliest development that made a big difference in my career.
SJ does karaoke. That's how she overcomes that.
That I do. Uh-huh. I love public speaking. I don't know how people are afraid of it. but Burke, just listening to you speak, it's really great. I know we've chatted a couple on the side a couple of times, but never heard you speak directly about your business. But one thing that I see all the time, especially with advisors in the independent channel, you know, they think that towards the end of their career, you know, they don't need to continue to change and adapt and evolve. And it sounds like that's been the theme of your career. And I think that's incredible because to be able to have a jumping off point, like you said, even from an event one year to the next, you constantly want to evolve, change. How can I make it better? How can I make myself better? What different seminars, programs do I want to go through? I always try and stress that, especially to advisors in the independent channel, that's the way change is. The only change that's going to stay consistent. Things are constantly going to change and evolve. And it sounds like you really tried to stay in front of that. So I think it's a really important message that advisors need to hear because some people think that they're going to be able to hunker down, do what they've been doing for the rest of forever, and that's the way that it's going to end. And I don't think that's the case. And I think you're a great example of that.
Thank you. I 100% agree. I was talking to David Grouse Sr. I went through his succession planning program here a few years ago. And one of the biggest points he made is so many advisors, once they hit about age 50, they start to get a little bored. They stop learning. They stop growing. They start trying to, you know, basically just do what they've always done and not really expand. And their business starts to drop off a little bit. And these were kind of averages. And then at 55, it kind of gets worse. And then at 60, it gets worse. And that's why he so strongly recommends that people bring in younger people, to bring in new blood and people that are yearning for fresh ideas. And not that I don't have them, I still do, but I've got younger advisors, you know, one's in his 40s and one's actually in his 20s. And then we have another advisor in late 30s. So you get that diversity of people that have been in the industry for different periods of time and all bring different levels of knowledge, but all have different kind of ideas of how they think growing the practice will work. And some of them are sometimes ideas that, you know, they'll bring to me and I'll say, well, I've tried that and here's why it's not a good idea. But other times they'll think of things I never would have thought of.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, just you on your own or you with a team, you can't just, you know, I don't remember that old saying, it's like, if you're not growing, you're dying kind of thing. You can't just sit back and do the same thing and expect to get the same results forever because the world's ever changing.
And I think that this pandemic has certainly shown that, but also the margin compression and other factors in the industry that are really changing things. So I think it really is, I think for the foreseeable future, a grow or die time. So it's you got to be continually in that growth mode. So.
And something we say around the office all the time, which I think that you kind of spoke to, is I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. If I'm the smartest person in the room, it means that I'm the only one that has, you know, ideas or things that they think that I know better. I want to involve myself with people like that all the time that have great things to say, have ideas, and you can kind of share your experiences. So I think that's great the way you've built it.
Yeah, I thank you. I'll have staff. Sometimes they'll try to show me how to do something. I'll say, I don't want to learn how to do that. I want you to do that. Don't show me that.
Exactly.
If I learn how to do it, then I might feel like I have to do it. So please don't show me.
Well, I think you've also built a practice that I think a lot of folks can be envious of because you've done just a phenomenal job. And you're as detached as you want to be, but you're also, I know, very, very closely involved with a lot of the decision making and service standards. So I know you take that stuff very seriously because the clients are incredibly important to you. So I think it's that combination that's pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you. I actually have an advisor who he came back here 5 years ago, I think, off the top of my head. He worked for me in the 90s, not as an advisor, but just as an assistant. And he was gone for 17 years, went and got his master's degree, became a minister, did that for 17 years. And he called me and said, you know, I told you when I quit that I had two things that were really my calling. One's financial services, one's ministry. He said, I want to get back into financial services. Do you know anybody hiring? And we ended up hiring. And he was really just calling me looking for kind of a connection. And we ended up hiring. And when he came back, one of the things he said was, you still have the systems in place that you had 17 years ago, but they're just better. And you have a lot more clients than you did back then. But basically the philosophies and the caring of your clients and all that is the same. You've just kind of taken it to the next level. And it was interesting to hear from kind of somebody who'd been on the outside for so long and then came back.
That's a great story. Well, Burke, thanks for spending some time with us today. I miss you, man. And my good friend Burke Rosenthal, thanks for spending some time with us. And I would certainly like to get you back on the podcast at some point.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks, Burke. Great to connect.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Take care.
I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, but you'll never hear me complain. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. Slip on down.